This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And now Shota, they're going out to see Nick Frangella, Craig Counsell, and all going out to see about Shota.
It looked like he was limping ever so slightly as he walked off the mound.
Well, and I told you that last inning he was pounding his, what would be his left quad. And it was almost like you do that sometimes if you're getting a cramp or something, like you're trying to release the cramp or a tight muscle. And now that's kind of what they're, you know, he's leaning on his right leg. You know, they're kind of, I think he's coming out of the game. Craig Counsell wants him to come out of the game, yeah.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score, kind of a scary moment. Shota Imanaga leaving with the trainer in the sixth inning after 87 pitches. You just don't want to see that visual. You just don't want to see your starting pitcher, your ace, walk off the mound and be unable to finish a game. Listen, it's, you know, we know that it's still, today is May, right? Are we at
It's May April
day?
30th, April last 30th. Day of April. Okay, don't get ahead of ourselves.
Okay. So we're in late
strong.
April.
Yeah.
But that's your guy.
That's
you know,
your guy.
You need that guy. And really, losing Steele just emphasizes and underlines how much you need your guy.
You don't want to get ahead of yourself. You're on the last day of April, but if you're 18-12, you have a chance to win 19 games and finish April 19-12 without your.
Would be unbelievable.
Without Justin Steele, you can call him the one, you can call him two. He's a top of the rotation starter, and you have not really had him for most of the season, and you're not going to have him for the rest of it. So when you see Shota Imanaga go grimace like that, you do hold your breath if you're a Cub fan. Ron Coomer, to his credit, I know he just was on top of it, and he
yes.
notices things
yes.
that the rest of us don't always notice.
And he's a great dude.
Well, he's a great dude. Yeah, he's one of God's great men. We can't wait till Friday.
You know, he really is
every
one
Friday,
of God's great men.
8 o'clock.
Is it wrong? Am I wrong by
no? I love that it's reference true. Because it's true. And he also is one of baseball's great analysts. Because when he looks yeah. at Shota Imanaga and he saw that, he kind of made people in the audience feel a little bit better, because it's much better than a cramp in your quad than
yes.
a elbow
yes.
situation
yes.
where you have whatever
yes.
that might lead to. And Shota Imanaga, post-game, also made people feel a little bit better when he was asked about the injury, and this is what he said through his interpreter.
I don't think there'll be any issue for the next start. I've had it in the past where I have that feeling of, you know, coming along, and I kind of push past it, and, you know, that affects me negatively. So I feel like today, you know, I was able to stop it a few steps before anything, and it would become a bigger issue. And so, you know, I think it took some courage to say, you know, I should come out of the game, but I'm glad I did.
There you go.
There you go. And baseball has changed so much that you applaud that decision, and you feel like it was a good night's work. Well, it was 87 pitches in five innings.
They had won the game.
They won the game as well. It was 9-0.
But I mean, it was 4-0 when he came out. Like, you felt very good about the position.
He was cruising, and the Cubs were cruising, and it was 4-0. And then they added five runs later when the bullpen took over.
And they didn't strike out once.
They didn't strike out once for the first time since 2013. A testament to just how good and deep this Cub lineup is, without Dansby Swanson really having a good year, with third base becoming somewhat of a black hole offensively or defensively or just overall. So you have two positions that are underperforming, and yet you have an offense considered the best in the game. That's when you know things are going right. And so you're on the verge of winning another series tonight in Pittsburgh with Matthew Boyd on the mound, and you feel very good about your chances.
Yeah, I agree with that all the way around. And it's a lot of good going on with the Chicago Cubs because, as we talked about in the last segment, best offense in the in Major League Baseball, period, end of story. Sadly, not that way for every team.
No.
And the White Sox now, what is it, 20 games where they've scored two or less? Less than three runs, I think.
It's really unfortunate what's going on in the South Side because you can two things can be true. They're more watchable because of...
The manager is clearly a better manager. They're clearly a better team, but they're not nearly good enough to be considered a Major League Baseball team.
Well, they're not playing... They're not getting the hitting necessary to qualify.
Yeah.
The pitching has been... I think acceptable.
Yes.
There have been times where your starting pitchers have given you a chance. They've done a couple things that I think are very, I think, reflective of a team that is trying a new approach to a lot of the same old problems. And here's two examples. I think when you look at over the weekend, we talked about this, Molly, the opener idea. You bring in an opener for an inning, and you like the matchups. So against the A's, you saw Jonathan Cannon come in, and I think it was Sean Burke come in after the starter started for an inning. The opener went an inning, and then they came in and relieved him. I don't know if that's going to work, but that was a Brian Bannister thing. And then likewise, in terms of a different approach, Colson Montgomery being plucked out of Charlotte, sent to Arizona for individual instruction, basically personal time, right?
Well,
it's personal time. That's a Ryan Fuller thing. That's a director of hitting thing. If he's going to be there with him, that's a different approach to a problem that you wouldn't have seen probably 3 to 5 years ago. Maybe you would have, but it seems like the Sox are trying to at least, I don't want to say be inventive, but they're trying to be creative in problem solving.
And I understand that, but what they're doing, they're interceding in a young star's failing. He is heading the wrong way. He is not, he was once a crown jewel of their minor league system and kind of stood alone as maybe the best position.
He was their
player.
Best prospect.
And not
among
and
the top 10 in baseball.
And that is no longer the case.
It no longer is the case, and you wonder if he can recover that.
They're trying to interrupt the failure, get him back to...
Catch him before he falls?
He's already fallen. Yeah.
Trying to help him back up?
I think they're taking him to Arizona, where he did well in the Arizona Fall League. And really, that's the only place he did well in the last year.
The 3 weeks? And what a magical 3 weeks it was.
And
no traffic? Great weather?
It's a nice place to go.
Scott Steele's loving that time of year?
Beautiful.
He was hitting?
It's like a perfect day every day. And you get him out there, and you get him on a backfield with just a guy working on his hitting.
But Mully.
And you go through all of the basics about it. And David, it's a desperate move.
It smacks of desperation. And it also just underscores what we feared at the time. They were looking so hard to see progress in Colson Montgomery that I think they overstated and they overvalued those 3 weeks in Arizona. The Arizona Fall League.
No doubt about it.
In the White Sox's mind, the Arizona Fall League success kind of made them forget about the failures of last season at Double A. Or Triple A. He was a Triple A last year.
He went from Double A into Triple A last year and he was awful. And then he did well in the Arizona Fall League. And you're right. They chose to follow the most recent positive signs as opposed to examine why he went off the boil, why he was so awful. And now they wanted him to win this job. They gave him an opportunity. His back acted up. But whatever happened to him, you're right. The what happened last year is now what's happening again this year. He hasn't made the kind of progress that he looked like he was heading
He's repeating mistakes, and he's repeating bad habits.
Yeah.
And so he left Chris Getz no other choice but to explain why they were sending Colson Montgomery to Arizona.
We're going to send Colson to Arizona, and, you know, we're going to get some one-on-one work with him, outside of kind of the atypical you know, Charlotte day to day and work on his swing. And we anticipate that to be a fairly short period of time, but felt like it was appropriate. He's on board. You know, there have been plenty of examples in this game of guys that, you know, have stepped out of their respective affiliates and going to work on something. We've done it in the past. We're going to do it with Colson. You know, Josh had experience with Perdomo over in Arizona. I know Mackenzie Gore is another one that, you know, felt like it was best for him, best for these players to get into a different environment and work on their swing or their pitch arsenal or mechanics. So we're going to do that with Colson, and we'll kind of take it from there.
Josh is Josh Barfield, who came from the Diamondbacks, and Perdomo is their shortstop. And I think you look at those examples, they're the exception to the rule. You don't see this happening throughout baseball with regularity. This is a...
They're hitting the panic button here.
It's a last-ditch effort.
Oh, this is it.
But you don't want to ask the question that you dread asking. What if this doesn't work?
Well, you know, what's going to happen is they're going to do this, and I'm guessing it's going to be a minimum of 2 weeks. It could be longer. I have no idea.
It can't be longer.
And then they'll send him back.
Can't be longer than two weeks.
And then they will give... David, I can't imagine what you would do. It doesn't have to be 10 days minimum. Like, I'm just saying, if you're working on something,
okay, 10 days.
Morning, news,
I'll give you
noon,
a week,
and night.
Week to 10 days.
You'll give me a week?
Yeah, I'll give you a week to 10 days.
You're not going to fix them in a week.
The train's moving.
Listen, the train is moving, and people are falling off of it.
I look at this as much a mental respite as I do a physical tune-up. If you can work on your swing in Charlotte or minor league outpost you choose as much as you can in the comforts of Arizona and Glendale.
The reality of life and of baseball is you have a problem, you work it out, and as the season goes on, you fix it and you get better. So, like, if you see Dansby Swanson struggling and not hitting, you work on it and you expect him to improve as the year goes on. You expect him to make adjustments and because that's what baseball is. And then on a day-to-day basis, you might have a bad week, and then all of a sudden you start putting together a good week, and that erases what the bad week was. And by the end of the year, your numbers are supposed to be as good as you are. This is you. And to interrupt that—that's
interesting. That's interesting. You mentioned Dansby Swanson.
Well, because he's struggled.
He's struggling.
Home run.
What would be the equivalent, though? Because this is essentially an in-season vacation. I don't want to call it's a working vacation, but you're taking a player off of a roster essentially for 2 weeks that you're willing to give him, and it's a 2 week personal time to get your mind right and work on your fundamentals. What if this trend started at the major league level? Because Dansby Swanson struggling mightily up until last night.
It's very important for people to learn how to go through these.
What do you mean it
periods.
Won't? Why won't it?
Because you can't. Because the train is moving, and you can't. Because in Major League Baseball, a two week turn could mean you are no longer a playoff team, and you go back and look, and at the end of the rainbow, it's like, oh, we lost that guy for those 2 weeks, and look what happened.
It's like an injury, though. You treat it like an injury. Like, what if you took Dansby Swanson as this example, hypothetically, and you said, all right, you're not seeing the ball, you're pressing at the plate, relax, go to Mesa, go to Sloan Park,
because he's already a major league player. He's overcome whatever those problems are to get to a point where he can overcome problems in season. The point of the game, you got to deal with disappointment, right? I mean, if you are successful,
but mentally he's overwhelmed. What if he's overwhelmed
one in three times? Well, then grow up and be a man. That's what Major League Baseball
is. It is and it isn't, Molly. But don't you remember? I know you do. Joe Maddon once hypothesized, what if you took an in-season vacation as a manager?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make you a better manager? by September, if you took a week off in July, Joe would imagine like riding his bike in the mountains of Utah and go away for a week, come back refreshed and ready to go. That's what I'm talking about. That's what you need sometimes is a mental respite, rejuvenation, all those things that come with a vacation. Yeah,
but that,
take
that,
a vacation, Dansby Swanson.
No, the
or Bad Aid.
It's the grind. You've got to be up for the grind. You've got to be capable of getting through the vicissitudes of a season and the various ups and downs. And you've got to get to a point where you can manage all of that. That's what being a professional player.
But it's a slippery slope because if you take your top prospect, and you say
21, how old is he?
He's 22 years old.
22.
So this is your one-time top prospect, and you say, we want to fix you. We want to get the most out of you. We're going to send you away for 2 weeks.
Mm.
What if it works?
Well, let me tell you something. Well, there is no alternative. It has to work.
Okay, if it works.
Yeah.
When it works,
right,
in your case.
When it works.
What stops the Sox from doing that the next time a struggling prospect needs rejuvenation?
Then do it.
Or an MLB player. What if Luis Robert would benefit from, hey, you know what? Two weeks.
Yeah, you know, Andrew Vaughn step would away. Benefit from that.
No, want Andrew Vaughn just to go away, period.
Well, but you can't, at some point, you cannot say, he's just unlucky. It looks like he can't hit his way. It's just bad luck. At some point, that's who you are. You know what? That like in the old days, they give the guy the nickname. You know, old bones and bad luck are here. It's just not
whose nickname
done.
Was that?
I don't know. There had to be a guy named Old Bones.
I want to know if anybody was ever nicknamed Old Bones. Remember an Old Bones?
There had to be.
You just pulled that one out of your pocket.
1800s.
Oh, yeah, Old Bones. That was the last time the Cubs didn't strike out. Old Bones was in the lineup. He couldn't hit either.
He in bad
luck. But no, I mean.
Got it together.
I almost, here's a part of the disappointment in Colson Montgomery's stalled progress is obvious and evident and understandable. I just think I'm fascinated by this move because you're essentially hitting pause on his season.
Right.
And you're doing what a lot of professionals do in every other walk of life. Is like, you know what? God, I need a vacation. God, I need to get away from this. I need to recharge.
Let me ask you.
Give me a week away.
How many people get that, though? I mean, how many people get that?
I know, Molly. I know, but you are.
It would be glorious if we could all have like a, you know what? Hey, Molly, you're kind of slipping a little bit. We couldn't
take a week.
We couldn't help but notice that you kept dropping F-bombs last week. What?
What?
You can't do that. We're gonna take you to a place in Arizona. You get a rub down every morning, and we'll do elocution lessons. And that doesn't happen in life.
I know, Mully, but baseball
make your bills, do
isn't
your work.
Real life.
You know what? It's entertainment.
It's entertainment. It's hard to compare the grind of a major league season with the grind of a 9-to-5 job.
It's hard to compare a prospect with a guy that's doing it at the major league level. There just
isn't, fair enough.
There isn't the in-season time that you have with a player who's supposed to be advanced to this point but hasn't made
it. It's a really good point. And before we break, because we have to get to Greg Schiano, 229 Texan, Old Bones won the Kentucky Derby in the late 20s. We'll have to check that one out.
Be a great name for our racehorse.
That would be great.
All right. We've got Greg Schiano. We're going to talk to the Rutgers head coach, former Bears assistant coach, a guy who's been around, been a head coach in the league and in college.
And he was Kyle Manungai's coach, so he can tell us what to expect from the Bears' seventh rounder.
From the new running back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
33rd pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Chicago Bears pick Kyle Manunga. He's running back for the Rutgers.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And we are delighted to welcome in Greg Schiano to the show. He is the Rutgers head football coach, former years and years ago, Bears assistant, And he joins us now on the Arturo Tire Hotline. Arturo, your hometown tire, Arturo.com. Greg, good morning. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Good morning, fellas.
Well, it was a long time ago that you were with the Bears, but I was actually covering the team at that point, so I remember it well. And you know, whenever there is that Chicago connection, you see one of your guys coming into the league and you think, this is a guy that knows how it's done. This is a coach that's been at the highest level in the NFL game, in the college game. And, you know, this is a Big Ten player coming to Chicago at a position of need. What can you tell us about your guy?
Well, I'll tell you what, first and foremost, he's a great human being. I mean, just a special person. And then you can go on from there. And what a real fine running back he is. He really was our main ball carrier for the last 2 years. Special runner, I think, really patient. And then when he makes a decision, he's very, very violent. And the best thing is his ball security. I've never seen a player like this. He had over 600 carries in his career. I think it's 633 to be exact, and he had zero fumbles. So that's rare.
That's remarkable, really, and I think that's his biggest strength, as it appears. He also has a tremendous ability to make the first tackler miss, as the numbers show. I do wonder, Greg, when you look at, you know what it takes to succeed at the National Football League, how did he and will he address or deal with his speed? Does he have breakaway speed, and is that something that will limit him, or does that explain why a runner that productive would fall to the seventh round?
Well, I think Kyle's speed is plenty enough to be a very productive back in the NFL. Is he a burner? No. But I can tell you that the way he runs, he's going to rip off some big runs, and that's great. But he's going to make those runs that, you know, could have been a two-yard loss. He's going to turn them into a three-yard gain, and it may be the best five-yard turnaround that you've ever seen, because he can literally stick a foot in the ground and violently make people miss. And that, to me, as a head coach, was the most important thing. He's a consistent player. And then, you know, you throw in the one thing that, you know, I think gets overlooked. He's very, very good in pass protection. You know, he can catch, he can do all those things, but he can block. And that's something that most college running backs struggle with.
You know, when you talk about the number of carries that he's had, what's really impressive is that that's against, is in a conference as good as any in the nation, right? We talk about how good the Big Ten is and the depth of the conference. He's producing those numbers against the best players in the country.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And you talk about a guy who's very durable. I mean, this guy would you know, rush the ball 32 times 1 week, turn around and rush it 29 the next. So, like, this is a guy that can take the hits and really, because he really never takes one directly on. He's very elusive. And the thing that I loved about him is that he'll take the fight to the defender. And that's one thing that after a while, defenders really don't enjoy about him. So, and I know he'll do the same thing at that level. I'm highly confident.
How often would you face defenses that loaded the box against your running game to stop him? And how did he handle such situations?
Well, earlier in his career, probably more so than later in his career, as our quarterback, Ethan Kalik-Manis, became better and we threw the ball better and protected better, we got a little more balanced boxes. But early on, he saw a bunch. And the, like I said earlier, the thing that he can do is he can make you miss. He's got, you know, violent change of direction. And if he doesn't, he's definitely a physical guy that'll run through you. And like you said, he did it in the Big Ten. So these are some guys that are going to be playing in that league as well. So I'm confident that he'll do the same for Chicago, and excited for him. I told him when he got selected by Chicago, what a great organization, what a great city. Really excited for him.
Yeah, and, you know, we've heard a lot of people compare him to Isaiah Pacheco just because he's a Rutgers back that was drafted late to a team that had a need. And, you know, he stepped in and did great for them. The Bears are kind of transitioning now in their offense. They want to do more play action. That's what Ben Johnson has done well in his time in Detroit, and obviously he's the new head coach. So you need a guy that can kind of run between the tackles. They've got DeAndre Swift here, and he can handle some of the outside stuff. But in terms of between the tackles, they need someone that can, you know, a kind of a guy that can handle contact and still be able to pick up yards.
Well, he can certainly do that. And I think that one of the things is, you know, he made some spectacular runs, like I said earlier, that got us out of trouble, you know, that were maybe ended up being a 5-yard run or a 4-yard run that really should have been a lost yardage play. And as a coach and as a play caller, those guys are invaluable because, you know, they get you out of harm's way where if you didn't have them, you'd be behind the sticks and putting that whole rack of downs in jeopardy.
I think it says a lot about the way the NFL now values the running back position, or maybe doesn't, that a guy this productive could fall as far as he did in the draft. I just wonder, as somebody who is a football lifer with experience in the NFL and now at the college level in the Big Ten, Greg, how you view what's going on with the running back position in the league?
Well, I think this year, you know, I agree with what you're alluding to, but I think this year especially, it was this especially deep running back class. Mm. So I think, you know, for a back to fall down that low is not unusual in the first place, and in this class it certainly isn't. But, you know, you mentioned Isaiah Pacheco. I think Kyle is a very similar type steal at this pick for Chicago. I do. I think he's going to come in and he's a professional in everything he does, the way he cares for his body, the way he approaches studying. A very, very smart guy. Like, you're dealing with a guy with rare intelligence. So I think Chicago's going to be thrilled with their pick. And as I told Kyle, just go out and be who you are, and you're going to have a successful career.
When it came time for you to recruit him, he's not the biggest guy in the world. How did you settle on that? I mean, everybody wants somebody that is a certain, you know, in the NFL, probably over 5'10", probably 220, that kind of thing. What was it that you overlooked to take an undersized guy?
Well, all honesty, it was his high school coach that talked me in. It was my first year back at Rutgers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is, who knows if we were recruiting him, if we would recruit him today. His high school coach sold me on him. Because he is a little bit undersized, and at the time there was another running back in the backfield with him, who was a national recruit. You know, at Don Bosco Prep High School is a power out here in the East Coast. And but I'm thankful and grateful that his coach really stood on the table for him, and I'm glad I listened to him because he's been a tremendous player for us, and I think that he'll be a tremendous player in the National Football League.
Well, we got you, Greg. Obviously, the Bears drafted somebody else from the Big Ten in the first round in Colston Loveland, and I know that you had the displeasure of having to defend him and prepare defenses for him the last couple of years. What did you think of that pick, and how would you describe just how difficult of a matchup problem he can be for a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on the head. He is a fabulous player. I think he's a guy that can do everything that you want a tight end to do in this age of football. And, you know, I don't know Ben very well, but I do know what a great offensive mind he is. And to have a weapon like that, I think he's going to utilize him just the way that he should be. And I think, you know, again, I'm just a college coach here trying to muddle along, but I do follow the draft, and I was really happy. I follow the Bears since I left years ago. I always follow the Bears a little bit closer than other teams, and I'm happy for them because I think it looks like they had a great draft.
And the Bears were your first stop in the NFL, so I'm sure that meant something, you know, getting out of the college game and coming into the NFL for the first time.
I sure did. I mean, I'm forever indebted to Coach Wanstead. He's done a lot for me and my family, and that was a great experience for us. At a young age, I got to learn about the National Football League, and boy, has that served me well over the years.
Greg, can you believe that Dave Wanstead is a media star in Chicago now after all these years?
And I love it. And I love it. And you covered the team. I see, you know, that is definitely full circle.
That's very kind.
That's so funny. Greg, thank you. Great catching up with you. We appreciate the inside look at your guy.
Thanks, Greg.
You got it, fellas.
That is Greg Schiano, the Rutgers head coach.
Good stuff. Yeah. It's very interesting that the comp and the almost symmetry, the seventh round pick from Rutgers, the running back Isaiah Pacheco, goes to the Chiefs. Great fit, great find, right? I don't know if that's going to be the case with Kyle Manungai, but it's certainly he has an opportunity, Mully, because if they don't pursue a veteran in free agency who's still available, if they don't go after a Nick Chubb, if they don't go after J.K. Dobbins, who is now in a different sort of stratosphere because of the tag that the Chargers applied yesterday, Manungai will get an opportunity, but I do sense the Bears might add to that running back room. But if they don't, he'll get a chance.
I think he'll get a chance either way. I think he's going to make the team. I think he's, you know, a violent runner for an undersized guy. I got to tell you, I don't know how they don't add to that. You know, the problem for me is, you know, he's the only difference in the running back room from what they have. And I don't know.
It's not enough of a commitment to change.
I don't think it is.
I think when you have, it's a good point that the way you asked it to Greg Schiano was when the Bears have such a reliance on the play action passing game as an element in Ben Johnson's offense, you need a more legitimate running threat than they have currently with just really no change to the backfield except for a seventh round draft pick. That's no disrespect to Kyle Manungai, but they need more than that to convince people that they are different running the ball than they were a year ago.
I thought it was really interesting the last 2 days. You know, there was a report 2 days ago, I'm sure you guys talked about it, as to whether or not Bradley Chubb had reached an arrangement. There was like a radio guy said that
Nick Chubb was the guy in Cleveland saying whether or not they were going to say goodbye to him in Cleveland.
And then yesterday, Chargers put a tag onto their running back J.K. Dobbins, because Dobbins is out of contract, he can still sign anywhere. It's just to make sure that they get some compensation, if maybe a compensatory pick in the next draft.
Maybe they know something.
Which wouldn't hurt a team signing him. It doesn't mean they have to give up anything.
It's not. Is that going to prevent anybody?
No, it's just like a little paperwork thing that they did to try to ensure they get. They did it with him and with their wide receiver, who's also in the same situation. So you're unrestricted free agent. But they make sure that if the guy signs somewhere, they get credit for wanting him back. In other words, they get exclusive rights to him if he doesn't sign before training camp. That's all it is.
That is.
But it's a compensatory thing. Makes you wonder if they feel that he's a guy.
Well, I'm sure they feel that way.
And I feel that way, too.
They also are protecting themselves because they are doing that after nudging him closer to the door.
Yes.
When they drafted a running back, Jim Harbaugh knows what he's doing. He's committed to the running game, and they drafted Hampton out of North Carolina.
Yeah.
And he's going to be the primary focus of their run game. So you think Dobbins might be on the move, and if he is, they'll get something for it.
Right.
That's all it is.
But it's the kind of thing that tells you that guy's available. Nick Chubb's available. It's just a reminder that there are other players out there that may help you.
Breece Hall was rumored in a trade with Dallas during the draft. You wonder if he's still being floated in potential deals. You just don't know. You have a need that exists for a running game that could really use a 1-2 complement. Now, maybe that person is Kyle Manungai, but I do feel like that would be, I don't say their last resort, but I don't think it would be their first option.
All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
And one of the things I always look at coming home to the city is I always look for cranes in the air.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Yeah, the cranes are... they're not up at Soldier Field. They're not fixing that joint.
No, but they're going to break ground in 2025 somewhere, right?
Yeah, they're going to break ground somewhere. They're not going to break ground at Soldier Field. They're probably going to break ground in Arlington Heights.
Yeah, they're taking another step in that direction. And there was a tersely worded letter.
Terse is the correct term.
Earlier in this month.
That's right.
From Kevin Warren, who wrote to the Chicago Park District. The Sun-Times called it a contentious letter. But basically about the condition of Soldier Field and the way that it's been operated. And the, quote, lack of routine maintenance and capital improvements. And in the letter, Kevin Warren complained about the lack of communication, regular meetings, upkeep. And it would appear, Mully, that just a year ago, when the Bears appeared at Soldier Field for the big presentation, complete with an opening prayer and all of the bells and whistles, Brandon Johnson was there. Everything looked copacetic. Everything was very harmonious. And now, 1 year later, looks like they're closer to Arlington Heights, and that relationship is as strained as ever. Because you know, you've been covering the team longer than I have, the one thing that's always been consistent, the relationship between the Bears and the city, not good. Am I overstating that?
No, I think that the relationship between the Bears and, you know, Mayor Daley, the original Mayor Daley, was awful. And it didn't really work when Michael was in charge of the team. He didn't have a very close relationship. And then when Ted took over that gig, the speed to post from getting yeah. the new building
right.
built and the late was unbelievable.
Unbelievable
how quickly that
yeah.
happened and how that just went through and everything.
And they've tried, and they've worked at it. It's been a relationship that's been a little rocky, though.
Yeah,
I think in fairness, that's the best way to describe it. It's been a rocky relationship.
But it's been Kevin Warren and the mayor, they've been thick as thieves.
They have been.
They've had a great relationship.
Which is why a letter like this stands out.
Do you remember the press conference?
I do remember the press conference.
Let's say a prayer and talk about that.
I remember that. Which is why this is somewhat significant.
Yeah, well,
it represents a shift.
It does represent a shift.
At the very least. And I also think it's not a great week for downtown stadium projects to be discussed in Chicago, because out in Washington, D.C., meanwhile, the Commanders announced their plans to build a $3 billion stadium back in the district, back away from Maryland. Yeah. And they're moving back in their urban municipality. And it's going to cost $3 billion, and the Commanders are set to contribute $2.7 billion they will pay for construction, but they're getting $1.1 billion essentially from the government. $500 for construction, $356 million for parking, and $202 for utilities. The infrastructure, if you will.
Yeah.
Which is a part of the public, maybe government's responsibility, or you can understand that. But things that were harder to envision here, or there seem to be some roadblocks.
Yeah, I you know, David, I don't know how much money that we as a municipality can afford to put into a project with the lakefront. I do think, though, that whether the Bears stay or go, and we believe they're leaving, that there are problems at Soldier Field that should be fixed and should be kept up. And
I think that, I agree with that.
If I'm being honest about it, I think what the letter is stating might be fairly true. They probably do need a lot of upgrades, and they haven't done them at all.
Pointing that letter out does not in any way absolve the Park District from its responsibility to fulfill its obligation.
Exactly
to
right.
give the Bears
exactly
a
right.
stadium
yep.
that doesn't have the issues that Kevin Warren articulated in that letter or pointed out in that letter. So
I think two things can be true. It can be the Bears are leaving and the relationship's deteriorated.
Yes.
And it can be that, hey, by the way, we're going to be here for a few more years and this place is a real dump and you're letting it go. I think both things can be absolutely the spot on truth.
Reminder, the lease runs through 2033.
Yeah.
They won't be here till 2033 if all goes well. It's unlikely. But this also just, it was worth pointing out because it was a significant shift. And it brings them, I think, one step closer to finalizing things in Arlington Heights.
All right. We've got Ozzie. Ozzie Guillen joins us next. We'll ask him.
Ozzie Trapillo?
Not Ozzie Trapillo.
Oh, okay. Other Ozzie?
How does Ozzie feel that he's now become the other Ozzie? Oh, my God. There's only one Ozzie until Trapillo starts at left tackle. Mully and Haw on the score.